We have a relationship with God. Let me make one assumption that all of you love Jesus Christ. You now all have a relationship with Him, even the ones standing out in the hallway. You never lose your relationship. God will never leave your side, and the other God will talk you into believing that He will. But Mike mentioned something else, and that's the fellowship part. Psalm 66:18, Isaiah 59, a couple places. One of the toughest things about me having a sin in my life is that I lose my fellowship with God. Now let me show you the dangerous part of that. I can be hiding something, something like Lance talked about, something like some of the rest of you talked about, and believe in my heart that it affects nobody but me. And then get up in the mornings and do things that I know are faithful things. I'll get up and read a little. I'll get up and pray a little. Now, if you could picture your prayers being like arrows and going up to God, if you're hiding something, they hit the ceiling and bounce backwards. Psalm 66 says, you hide sin in your heart, He turns His ear aside. He never leaves your side, but He doesn't listen. Now, I just want you to think for a minute for all the people you're praying for, your friends, your brothers, your mothers, your fathers. Because of my selfishness, God never hears me begging for their lives. Please remember that. We don't sin in a vacuum, and I know you've heard that before. But one of the first things you're going to get fought for when you go down this hill is trading the gift God gave you while you were up here for the comfort of your sin. Don't give it to Him. Don't give it to Him. Something else is going to happen. And I guess maybe I'm just speaking to me, but I mentioned when I was praying about voices, you all have one. As you can tell by the testimonies up here, a lot of the gentlemen heard voices. By that I mean the world's voices, friends, brothers, aunts, uncles, people talking to them. God's voice. When you go back down, I want you to be able to tell the difference between Satan's voice and God's voice. Satan's voice sounds like this. Carrie, you stink at this, and you know, last night when Mike mentioned that, you're guilty of that too. Oh yeah, and the skip thing, and you know that thing you do that nobody knows about, you got that, and how can you dare think you could be up here? And then there's that thing, and oh, you remember the way you talked to Penny before you left? And oh yeah, and you remember you got your son living with you, and you kind of like treated him like a jerk. Satan's voice creates this list in your head, and it immobilizes you. Here's what God's voice sounds like. Carrie, go apologize too. We heard one person up here, Isaac. He said, I got to call her. God says, Paul said, this one thing I do, the steps of a righteous man or woman are ordered by God, one step at a time. Forget about all that stuff you screwed up. I'm guilty of it. It's true. They're all true. But God says, wait. Forget that voice. I want you to do the one thing I pointed out. Call Penny. Call your son. Call your father. This is the way God talks. He not only points something out, but He puts it right here within your reach. Never outside your hand. Because what He calls you to do, He equips you to take care of. He wants to see each one of you believe that He has a plan, and not only that, He's going to give you the capability to complete the plan. He wants you to see those little white lines on the road go by. We all desire to see success in our lives. And we give it up because there's so many things we failed at. Not only about you, but I hate that word, failure. But the reality is, I do it on occasion. But God doesn't get me down and kick me about the failures. He says, wait. Would you just shut off those voices for a minute? You and I both know they're true, but remember, I died for you. I just want you to do this one thing, and I look at it and I go, well, what's that got to do with anything? Just please do it for me. And anytime anybody says something like that you go, well, where's that in Scripture? Ask me, where's that in Scripture? God says, He's in the details. You pay attention to the small things, I'll take care of the big things. I want you to go back thinking about what's the one thing he wants you to do. Who's the one person he wants you to talk to? What's the one thing in your life he wants you to just hand over to him? Not the 10, wrong voice, the one. You want to stay right? You want to stay equipped? You want to keep moving? Do it one thing at a time. One thing at a time. As I went through this, you know, we heard from Skip talking about getting right. One of the things he brought up was that we need to learn how to serve. And I heard Chuck Smith say years ago that the way he could tell if he really was a servant was how he felt when somebody called him one. But I have to say I haven't quite reached that, because every now and then when somebody calls me one, I don't react right. But that's a good guideline. Staying right is have a place in your life where you're not in the limelight, but you serve. Be somebody that when you walk around Calvary, I mean, if it really is your church and you really are getting fed and you really are contributing because God's asked you to, you're actually giving it to God. Every now and then you see a paper cup, a piece of paper, pick it up. Don't wait for me to do it. Or a school ministry person. It's your church. It's your home. Treat it like it was. Is. To stay right, continually question your motives. One man says we need three people in our lives to keep us honest. Howard Hendricks. We need a Paul, somebody old like me. You need a Barnabas, and you need a Timothy. Paul's somebody older. You watch their lives and you go, you know, something about him, you know, if he can pull this off, I got to find out how he does this. A real Paul, if they are a Paul, when you come to them and say, would you teach me about this? They never say no. It's time. Barnabas is probably the one you pray about first. Somebody just like you, running same place on the track. Somebody you give permission to question your life. Somebody you can go to. Like Lance, he goes to somebody, he's got his one friend. You know what, I'm really messing up in this area. Please help me. Barnabas, somebody you both give each other permission to question what you're doing, how you're doing. You do not expose your wives in those relationships. You protect her. This is about your personal growth. This isn't somebody that you talk about, the other person that God says is the completer of your life. It's kind of like exposing your own skin. I know some of us think we can do that. You don't do that. This is about your walk with God. Somebody who keeps you going the right direction. Now, you may confess to him that you just talked to her poorly. That's allowed. But you do not expose her shortcomings. You're her shield. And I'll just tell you what I've learned after 27 years. There's not a woman that I have not run into who doesn't want two things from you. Forget about all the other stuff, all the other books. She wants you to make her feel safe and enough. Pornography robs her of both those things. You want to fool around in the shower first thing in the morning? You just mess with your relationship with God and with her. She'll never feel safe or enough. And everything inside you wants her to trust you. And you just yank the rug out from under that. Think about making her feel safe and enough. 1 Peter 3, I think 7th verse. He says, if I don't treat her like a gift from heaven, not one of my prayers are heard. It is critical that you act like a shield. You protect her. Practically, what's that look like? Do they have the capability to verbally assault us? But I mean, they can send some things our way because we mess up. Yeah. I challenge you. Don't say a word. All it takes for an argument to end is one person not to say anything. Have the rule with her. You know what? I heard this old white hair guy talking about, I need to be more quiet. You might be surprised how often they say something and you say nothing back because you have the rule in place. Okay, you've agreed. I'm not going to say anything. You're not blowing her off, so you got to agree with her. Every time they will come back and start the conversation again. And generally it begins with, you know, I shouldn't have talked like that. But you have to give up your right to be right. You have to stay quiet. I often joke with people, I can go home tonight, Penny and I can have a time of intense fellowship. And I can be so right, I'll sleep on the couch. I can be quiet and I get to sleep where I want. It's that clear. If you love them, continually act like you do. In Ephesians, it's not by accident that there's a 4-to-5-time ratio of us loving them like Christ loved the church. And at the tail end of that chapter, it just says, oh, no, by the way, ladies, would you respect these knuckleheads? Well, knuckleheads isn't in there, but just once they're asked to do it. We're asked to love them continually. This isn't about us. It's about us letting God love them through us. And again, he does not ask you to do anything that is not possible. A verse that goes with this, and you can look it up later if you want. Yeah, that's okay. Psalm 101. Let's see, we've got some time here. I want you to think about this. And this is still in Skip's first part, getting right. I will sing of mercy and justice to you, O Lord. I will sing praises. I will behave wisely in a perfect way. Oh, when will you come to me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. A perverse heart shall depart from me. I will not know wickedness. Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. My eyes shall be on the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He who walks in a perfect way, he shall serve me. He who works deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who tells lies shall not continue in my presence. Early I will destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all the evildoers from the city of the Lord. Get equipped. Neil talked about our pride. You get a chance to look up Isaiah 14. It talks about Satan. Satan's got 5, if I remember right, I wills. God likes you to have plans, but he asks us to commit our plans to him, and then you take one step at a time. Satan had all these I wills, and I don't know when the last time you said that. You know, I will do this. Again, it's okay to have guidance, direction, and desire as long as you've committed it to God first. Philippians. Again, this is along the line of pride. One of the first verses that I got in order to stay married 24 years ago. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. You want to stay equipped? You want to stay honest about your pride? It says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit. God uses words like that so that I can't turn it into anything else. Nothing, every, always. That's what he means. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit. But in all things, another word, all. Consider others better than yourself. We're challenged by Neil to read, to be honest about our weaknesses. You know, this is a really hard thing. I was telling some people that in October I had one of those water leaks that a lot of you guys got. And, you know, the insurance gave us the resources and everything, but I really thought that I could, after they got everything taken care of, that I could get it painted on my own. I mean, I had weekends and I had things. And I really hate asking for help. February rolled around and there was a little tension between Penny and I, and so I went to the men's Bible study that I'm involved in. And I really had to ask them if they'd help me paint. 2 weekends later, we're done. I buy the paint, they show up. There's something here that you need to understand. God created us way back in the beginning, and he put a stamp on each one of you. You're created in his image. There's something else he created. He created you to be dependent upon Him and His ways. And everything that Satan has to offer me, all the things that we compete with, and all have to do with this other word, independence. Even the country that we live in, you know, based on our independence. And it's a cool word, as long as I'm independently dependent upon the God who made me. And I'm representing Him accurately. One of the hardest things for me to say, even now after 20-some years with Him, is to look out there and say to somebody when I need it, I need help. I went home one day about 3 years into my marriage and was losing my marriage and my two kids at the time. A third one later came, but the thing that changed our marriage, besides God bringing a lawsuit and some other stuff, was I realized how much I needed this blonde in my life. There was something about her that just... And you know, I just had to figure this out. I'd done things certain ways for so long, and it was time, as the Bible says, to put off all those ways and to take a chance and put on something else and see if it worked. And it did. Now, I can tell you it wasn't easy. It took 14 months for her to think that I was changing. On my insides, I felt like God was running a chainsaw, but there was nothing I could do to prove to Penny that I was changing. One day, though, I said to her, I need you to stay. It changed. I've never said that before. Get equipped. Justin. Truth. Go down the mountain with, what's the truth about you right now? What is the truth? I'm going to follow it up with something else, and you can tell this just comes right out of my office for those of you who have been in it. Is there somebody right now in my life I'm blaming for something? Is there something I look back to, like a young man that had been abused by a priest? And I had a fun thing happen to me years ago at 13, and you know, the reality is, and I mean this in a kind way, no matter how tough my life has been, no matter how deep the suffering, no matter how extensive the pain and the wreckage and the carnage, I cannot use any of it or any of the people as an excuse for disobeying God. It took me a while to get to that. One man asked me how I learned to forgive. I said, that first time it took me 10 months, every day just getting up and going, you know, Lord, You say this is possible. I don't feel a thing. I'm numb on the inside, but you know, if this is what You want, I'm open. And 10 months later or so, I don't know how it happens, but man, I felt like this thing just came off of me, because when His name came up, names came up, I didn't feel anything. It was gone. You can't imagine the freedom that comes with being loosened from your anger. Because blaming really is about being angry. It happens to be the one and only emotion that Jesus talks about in the Bible. And you can be angry today. You just can't take it to bed. Because once you do, like I did for 20 years or so, it goes from anger to wrath to evil speaking. Resentment, where I don't even care if you're alive or dead, and then I'm bitter. What's really cool about anger is, for some of us men, we have the uncanny capability of hiding it inside, like some Mount St. Helens. And we use the excuse, you know, that whether we can play football with it or we can box with it, but we can control when the volcano comes off. And actually, society kind of accepts that kind of volcanic eruption. The reality is God doesn't. He wants you to get over it. If we believe what Justin said about the truth, that God's offering us the truth, then you look at John 8 and he says, the truth will set me free. How badly do you want to be free? Or do you just want to grip your anger? Do you just want to grip that person that messed with you? Because you got to do something that's really hard. And for one brief moment, you're really vulnerable. You got to open your hands and let that person go. You got to open your hands, let the anger go. Mike, get going. I think one of the things he said that hit me the most was, we, you, me, are created to lead. And you know what? Sometimes we just have to remind each other we were. It's so easy to believe that we'll never amount to anything because of all the things we're messing with, all the things we've messed with. You were created to lead. Part of the verse he said there, do you rest your hope fully on Jesus Christ? I want to contrast that with the word that shows up a lot in Proverbs, striving. Striving contains anger. So he's asking you, stop striving and rest on me in the hope that I got a plan for you. Your anger will mislead you. His peace and rest will not. The very thing that you need in this life is release from the anger. Take a chance, open your hands, and see what he puts there. Verses, Jeremiah 9:23-24, Micah 6:8. In Jeremiah, he tells us, lots of men like to glory in things, their might, their power, their riches. He says, I want you to glory in one thing, that you love and understand me, because that's what I delight in. A lot of you talked about delighting in God. Let me make it a little different. He delights in you. Do you believe it? He delights in you. You're about to go down this hill, and I want you to believe he created you to lead because he's created you with the possibility to delight him. Not just to fail one more time, but to delight him. In the school ministry, I had the guys memorize this verse. And as I thought about you guys, I think it kind of goes with it because we're all going to get sidetracked. And part of protecting yourself from getting sidetracked before we do communion, this is something I want you to do. And as a brand new Christian, some of you heard this. We're sort of pray a little bit and read a little bit and go to church. Let me take it a little further. You got to set your priorities. My priorities and yours are the same. God first, penny second, kids third, work fourth, church, relatives. They don't move. Set them. God first. Me being here isn't God time. This is work time. Time with him, alone. 5 minutes is all it takes. Little boy with the loaves and fishes. He took a few things and God fed 5, 6, 7,000 people each time. He can take 5 minutes of your day and orient you for the whole day. Don't let Satan trick you into thinking you've got to hang out for an hour with God. It'd be cool if you did. It'd be cool if I did. You just got to be there and be there intently for 5 minutes. See what he does. Let's say you memorize something like Proverbs 18:1. The man who isolates himself, seeks his own desires, and rails against all sound judgment. And you pray, you know, Father, don't let me be one of these guys. Please just take me out of my comfort zone. Help me to be around people. And you're done. You're off and running. You can always pray about your finances, your wife, your children. In the beginning, though, getting you going. The Lord's Prayer. That's a model for a reason. It's easy. Not a mantra. Everything there is covered. Set your priorities. And here, I want you to believe this. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Paul would say to Philemon as he sends him out, having confidence in your obedience, I know that you will do even more than I say. As we take communion, I want you to think about that, and I want you to believe it. Your faith in Jesus Christ has overcome the things that you're struggling with and will continue to. And that you, if you believe that, will do even more than we've talked about this weekend. That's his plan for you. And he's all about completing the plan. Don't give up. Go for it. Father, I thank you for these gentlemen. I thank you for the plan you have for each one of them. And Father, I pray you would encourage them first to believe it and then to step into the plan. As we gathered at Cake Communion, Lord, you said that this was something that you wanted us to do often. And I think often just to remind us of what you've done for us, the sacrifice you made, but the possibilities you created for us to overcome, to be like those 11 that you trained. It's possible. Help us all to leave believing it as we take these elements, that you love us. You don't tease us, you call us. Help these men to accept the call in their lives and to be holy instruments in your hands. In your Son's name, amen.